your kids could get free or low-cost health coverage from Medicaid or CHIP. Even if you've applied before, they may be eligible now. Kids up to age 19 are covered for checkups, vaccines, dentist visits, hospital care, and more. And if they already have Medicaid or CHIP, remember to renew every year. Visit InsureKidsNow.gov or call 877-KIDS-NOW. Paid for by the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services.
Charlotte Soccer Show, John Hayes, Danny Brams. We're here at Mug's Coffee on a Friday morning. Cheers to you, Danny, as always here on the show, Danny. And I want to say hi to you, of course, but we also have to say hello to our special guest on today's episode. She's Carol Walton of the Charlotte Ledger, of course, here doing a fantastic job covering this club and this city and this soccer city. And want to say hi to you first on the show. Great to see you here at Mug's, and awesome to have you on the show for the first time.
Thank you, guys. This is such a thrill for me to be here. I feel like I jumped through my radio and got to be with you guys. I hear you guys having coffee and talking about Charlotte FC, and I'm like, I want to be there. I want to hang with those guys. So thanks for having me on.
Absolutely.
Yeah, welcome. You're welcome. Danny Brams checking in. I am here, even though John tried to erase me from the intro. Welcome, Carol. It's great. I love to think the idea that we can provide you some respite from the car lines out there when you're picking up the fam brings me joy, because I've suffered in those car lines myself.
Yeah, that one time it was a trip home from camp. I dropped a kid off at winter camp, and I got a good solid like hour and 45 minutes.
Oh, nice. And that's a tough moment for a parent, you know, drop the kid off at the overnight camp. I'm glad we could be there for you in your moment of, you know, where you needed something like that.
No, it was more like a celebration.
Even better.
I'm kidding, kind of.
Everybody needs that two-week break in the summertime. There's no doubt about that. But what we're going to do today on the show is, yes, we're going to talk about Charlotte FC. We're going to talk about what's going on with the club. A new signing. Danny, is there a signing?
We got a signing. Signed, sealed, delivered. He's yours, baby. Let's go.
That's exciting. We've been waiting what feels like 40 days for this news, because we have been waiting 40 days almost for this news.
Yeah. So tell us, we waited 40 days and 40 nights and still no flood. I don't know what's going on, but we're going to ask.
So who is this French player?
French player, Carol, I think you might have even looked a little more into him deeper than I have, but Jibril Diani, that's how I got his name pronunciation, Jibril.
You've been practicing that?
I studied French when I was a younger man. I was actually French Student of the Year 4 years in a row at St. Joseph's High School.
Wow. Your resume just never quits, does it?
19 années ago, you know, this way or whatever. Jibril Diani is how I think you say his name. And regardless of how you say his name, hopefully we're going to be shouting it a lot. I'm not sure. He looks like a backup player, though. What do you think, Carol?
Yeah, I get a vibe a little bit like Derek Jones, maybe. That kind of utility. Not utility, but solid defending, you know,
so he's
presence.
So he's just a smaller, less experienced, more expensive, takes up an international spot instead of a domestic slot. Derek Jones, love it. Let's get him in here.
Jibril.
We love you. Bienvenue.
I need some background from you guys. Were you guys on the DJ train last year?
Big time.
Yeah.
Derek Jones has got it going on. This is a Derek Jones-friendly podcast zone for sure.
One of my favorite moments of the 2023 season was, I forget who Charlotte played, but it was a home match. Charlotte won. And Derek Jones played in this advanced midfield role. It was a different position that he played all season long. And
he was like a forward operating base. Yeah.
You know, it's like instead of in that CDM role where you're playing a pivot towards the back line, he was pivoting about 5 yards away from the opponent's 18-yard box, which was really cool to see. And leave it to Christian Latanzio to see that working and never try it again. But we don't have to go down that road. But Carol's here, and we're going to get into talk about a new signing. Talk about the club, what's happened.
I mean, it's just good to have somebody. It's just good to have anybody. And I shouldn't underplay the fact that like everyone in there has been sitting on pins and needles, right, for a month trying to bring somebody in.
And that's my question here, right? Because Carol's a journalist. She covers this club professionally for the Charlotte Ledger. Football Friday, it's a great newsletter that's published every week. If you're not subscribed to Football Friday, make sure you do that. So I want to hear about the vision when it comes to Football Friday and what you bring to this fan base. But I also want to hear about your experience over the last couple months, specifically over the last 40 days within this transfer window, covering the club, looking for news, working your sources, but also Dean Smith comes into the building, you know, meeting a new manager, covering a new manager, dealing with that transition as well. So what's it been like on the beat for the last couple months?
Well, I gotta say, it's been pretty quiet. And honestly, to be honest, we come out weekly during the season, and in the off season, it's like when there's news, we're gonna cover it. And there really hasn't been much. And I was really surprised, actually, because with the Carol Swiderski thing hanging in the air, I figured Dean Smith, we get him first. Then there'd be discussion. I come from the baseball mold, so I kind of thought there'd be a conversation between the two of them early on. Then they'd make a decision. You know, they'd be on the way. But I'm learning soccer is different, man. I think they fly by the seat of their pants based on when the windows are open and totally. What's going on. So the fact that we saw Swiderski and Joswiak get on a plane and come here, my first thought was, well, maybe they're going to buy into Dean Smith. Maybe Swiderski's going, hey, let's see how this goes. So,
yeah,
you know,
what was the reason for Camille to even come to Charlotte if he was never going to Miami? But he did come.
My guess was because he needed to get a physical so that Charlotte could sell him. An up-to-date physical.
Maybe fill out the paperwork for the direct deposit return on his place, you know, stuff like that.
I really do think maybe I was taking it too fast and not giving Smith enough time and credit to really get himself established before he starts making these huge decisions.
I got to say, I don't think you were. I think the decision should have come sooner, too. I'm on record as saying that if you knew Carol didn't want – if your reason for letting Carol go on the last day was that because he didn't want to be here, well, you knew that in the summer, so you should have let him go on the first day.
I think it had to do with more with the market than – the time, like the timing, was based on the demand on the other end. I think Charlotte would have preferred, you know, sell him December 15th,
right.
You know, and beyond. That's right. And that's kind of what I envisioned would happen.
October 27th,
yeah,
the day after Red Bull's game.
Yeah.
Well, in hearing you speak this way, it's just super interesting because, you know, we do have a manager in Dean Smith that comes from the Premier League, comes from the Championship, comes from a place where typically the window closes 2 weeks after the season starts. Right, so actually Dean Smith getting this done before the year is probably right on schedule with what he's used to as far as roster build. And it's just so unique and so different, and it's why I think you have to think about this season in a way that's, you know, it's one half of the season is to get until June, the other half of the season is to get into October. And it's just fascinating to me. So what's been your takeaways? I mean, yes, it's been slow. But you covered Christian Latanzio, you covered Miguel Angel Ramirez.
Yeah.
What's it been like, you know, transitioning into covering a Dean Smith-led club? You're on the press conferences, you're asking great questions, you're talking to people who are connected with the club. What's the vibe like?
I think it's really good. I think it's a breath of fresh air to have a guy in a press conference who can answer a question with a direct answer. And I was thinking about this on the way over here, that it really kind of feels like his on-the-field style is going to mimic his off-the-field, which is direct. Kick the ball up the field and go for it.
Yes.
And, I mean, to have a guy, he told us one day that Swiderski had a hip thing, so he's going to be out of practice. I'm like, you know, Latanzio never would have initiated that, even though it was obvious, like, where's your star player, you know? And then we get a lot of roundabout stuff. And MAR was a little bit like that, too. They'd have a game where they'd lose 3-0. And played terribly, and he would come on the post game and say they played great. And I'm like, what am I missing?
Yeah.
Well,
yeah.
I'm confused. What's going on with this sport? I don't get it.
They were gaslighting us for a little while there. You know?
Yeah.
And he was gaslighting them, and they were gaslighting us. It was a gaslight flowing downhill on that one.
Yeah, but I loved it the other day, the game, you know, in California, where it looked to me like it was, you know, it was more direct, and there were some good things, but the first half was pretty – you know, not a lot going on, you know, and it really looked like when LAFC called off, I'm sorry, the LA Galaxy called off the dogs, that's when we started playing well. And in the post game, that's kind of what he said. And I'm like, okay, all right, this is going
to
be good.
That was really refreshing to me. It was the way that, like, he, fan base was like, we were all lit up like a Christmas tree a few weeks late as far as loving the 3 goals and the clean sheet. And Dean was like downplay. He, you know, he didn't like talk trash, but he was like, yeah, it was okay. We got a lot to work on. And that's what we needed to hear.
Yeah. Granted, I mean, watching it literally on my phone, you know, with the one camera angle, and then there's the shadows. I had a hard time telling who was on the opposite side. So, you know,
it was hard to tell.
Yeah, it was a little bit tricky. But anyway, enjoyed it. But Yeah, I think the vibe I get off the field is all good as well. Like, I really feel like Dean Smith is, I mean, we heard man's man, players, coach, you know. But I think he's been like that with the entire organization so far. Mm-hmm. From what I hear, he's hanging out in the building in the marketing area, you
right.
know.
Man, and he knows knows everybody's name. I know that's a little bit of a cliche, but, like, it goes a long way, you know.
Yeah, absolutely. So yeah. I think I do think it's going to take some time. I don't necessarily think it's going to be pretty out of the chute, although it'd be nice if they'd score some of these goals, you know.
I'm good if it's not pretty games 2 through 4. Game 1, can we at least just, like, maybe have, like, some beginner's luck?
Maybe a goal. Yeah, how about a goal? Yeah, one goal, yeah, at least.
Yeah, it's just start that home game on the 24th, to me, is so important. You know, the last thing that you want to do is lose that one, because if you do, then you have to go play 3 on the road, and all of a sudden you come back, and that momentum feels like it doesn't exist. So while I think asking for patience is the right thing to do, and I think what's interesting, and I want to get your take on this, is, like, how often does he harp on February 24th?
All the time.
Yes.
Yeah. Yeah. All the time. It's interesting.
He knows how important that day is, I think. And he's communicated that with his players. And he's not afraid to just tell everybody. Yeah.
That's right.
Even the video that they put out before the match on Wednesday, he said 16 days. 16 days.
Yeah.
That's what we're ready for when they're about to go play 90 minutes.
It might be that I'm asking myself for patience, because, you guys, I have a hard time imagining this team without Swiderski. I just do. To me, he was head and shoulders above everybody else.
Yeah.
I mean, no offense to everybody else, but the skill set, I almost wanted to research this, but I just didn't have the time, I guess. How many goals coming down the stretch last year was he not a part of the buildup?
Probably not many.
Yeah. So I'm like, this is a rebuilding kind of a thing. Like, how do you learn how to play without him? But to Dean Smith's credit, I don't think he's worried about that. And
right.
And to me, the interesting thing I'm going to be curious to see is how he gets the other guys better. How does he utilize Scott Arfield better? How does he, obviously, Adjaman is huge. And Enzo, all these guys that we've had, you know, they've had talent here.
I honestly think everything you're saying is right about Carroll. Like, you're preaching to the Carroll choir over here, from the Carroll choir to the Carroll choir. Like, I love Swiderski. Probably would call him my favorite player on the club last 2 years. You know, wanted to cheer for that talisman. Wanted to, like, have that guy that I identified with as someone who was our special player who could save us. And he did save us at times. I'm thinking of Chicago in 2022. There's other notable spots where he really did do match difference-making performances. But at the same time, the second part of what you said is just as true as well. I don't know if he even had a place in this lineup under Dean Smith. Not because he was, you know, he may have been technically gifted more than anybody else in the forward line, but it's not his style of play to run in behind defenders, which is what Dean has mentioned a couple times. He's not going to score that goal like Enzo scored against LA, which was bad defense. You know, we praise it to high heaven, but it was really just bad defense. But still, like, I just think Dean is looking for a striker that runs in behind and makes those runs, and that's Enzo Copetti, and that's Patrick Adjaman as second, and Carroll's all of a sudden fighting for the backup spot or readapting his game out to right wing. And so that's why I think not only the fact that he wanted to go, but I think Dean was happy to just let him go. And he and Dino even kind of commented that right the other day. He was just like, hey, if you don't want to be here, if you're not going to play the way we need to play, if you're not for the crown, get out of town.
That's, you know. That's pretty cool, though. That gives me confidence in him. Like, man, he's chill. You know, he's got it going on.
Yeah, he does. He's been around the block.
Yeah.
And honestly, that's what happens when you're a Premier League manager. When you manage clubs that have been relegated, right, you've been through shit. You've been through the shit. This is nothing compared to managing Leicester and getting relegated, managing a Norwich squad that is teetering once again and getting relegated. And just if you think about Dean Smith and his last two opportunities, he's not been successful. And he hasn't had a lot of time to get things right. He was asked to change things very quickly, provide the new manager bump, and it doesn't work out in 3 months, and he's gone.
Right.
Now, in his mind, I think he looks at this opportunity as like, there's no fucking way they're going to fire me this season, no matter how bad we are.
Right, might as well clear the decks, you know?
Yeah, totally.
Exactly.
Yeah, so you.
If it doesn't work, we can do it again next year.
But here's my little, like, public, you know, service announcement to the fans. Next time you call for the coach's head, there's a rebuild involved. There is time. I think the thing to Latanzio was just sort of dumb luck because everybody was already in place.
Right.
Not to say the job done, but the fact that they didn't have to completely reboot. But this, what we're seeing, that's what it is.
Yeah.
So, I'm not, you know, I sound like I'm preaching for patience, but I'm just saying, don't call for his head after every single loss. Yeah. It gets tired, you know, so anyway.
Yeah, if we lose the first four games of the season, don't try to fire Dean Smith. Like, yeah. This is going to...
Right. And no, by the way, let me do that.
Hey, if they lose four games out of the shoot, you can say it all you want. But I'm just saying, you know, after one bad half,
I can't see that happening. Yeah. But we always beat New York City, right? Come on. Yeah. We never lost to them.
All right, well, here, can I throw something out? The guy that I think is sort of really important and will be interesting to see is Breck Diagne.
Ooh, let's go.
And where, you know, because I feel like last year he has the gifts, right? He has some pretty cool gifts in those feet, and we didn't really see him because he was coming in late, and, you know. But to see him start to finish this year, can he get in the middle and do the stuff that Swiderski was doing?
Oh, I definitely think. I think he now becomes probably the most technical player now that Swiderski's gone. I don't know. Maybe Vargas a little different. Maybe Westwood just for the veteranship. But I love Diagne. I think we just saw flashes last year, and like he, you know, again, like I've kind of jokingly thrown out this whole, you know, everyone's a new signing under Dino, but if that applies to anyone, it really does apply to Diagne because like we barely saw him last year. He was being played out of position on the wing instead of more centrally where he can, you know, I've said this many times, but like when you have someone who can go left or right, why would you take away one of those options from him? And that's what Latanzio did with him a lot last year. So I just think it's time for him to shine and break out. I'd like to see him get involved in, you know, 5 to 10 goals and really just make a difference even beyond just, you know, just be someone that we know, like, oh, when Diagne's on the field, we're coming to play. And I think that's what Dino wants from him, too.
Well, what's interesting, my favorite part about the culture of soccer, one of my favorite parts about the culture of soccer is that, you know, Diagne wears number 10. Mm-hmm. Enzo Capetti wears number 9. Mm-hmm. Like, that's like if you're going to wear those numbers, you got to show it. So just from that point of view,
right.
if Diagne is going to be asked to play that number 10 role and be creative and an attacking midfielder that is making things happen in the box, like, if he's not getting the job done... Who else can wear that number? You know, is what I'm starting.
Yeah, I kind of expect Dean Smith to come in there and say, "Well, you don't get 10 until I say you get 10."
Right.
You
know? I'm surprised he didn't strip numbers down. For
too. Yeah, exactly. But that would have been cool.
That would have been cool. But I think, you know, Breck Diagne, it's a great point. Enzo Capetti, those two, the 9 and the 10, wearing the numbers, working together, that's so important. It's important to this club. There's no doubt about that. What about? I think I'm confused about the midfield situation. Right. Like I feel like when we saw the lineup on Wednesday, I looked at the back line and I said, okay, like I'm starting to get it here. Nathan Byrne, like there was this one highlight that we showed where Nathan Byrne, he wasn't in the screen, and then he like shows up in the screen like in full sprint. I guess we could turn that into a funny GIF. But you know, I was like, okay, good. We're set there on the right back. We got some guys that want to play center back. To me, I look at the midfield, and yes, Diagne, he's probably going to be in it. Westwood is probably going to be in it. But that third spot is so interesting. You're covering the club closely. You know there's a lot of young players involved. Have you talked to anybody or heard anything about just kind of, you know, somebody like Brant Bronico? Can he get into this midfield? Petkovic, he's 20 years old. He's getting time. Who is the third man in this midfield?
I think he's somebody they're going to sign as a DP in July.
Okay.
I don't think it's there. So, I mean, yeah. I love Brant Bronico. What's not to love about him? And he will always have a role on any team.
Totally.
When healthy. And I don't know about the young Serbian, Nikolai. You know, and everybody is high on him. Zoran is very high on him. So I'm curious to see. I didn't see a whole lot in my shadow phone view. I couldn't really get a vibe there.
Yeah.
He kind of went invisible in a bad way. You can be invisible in a good way or invisible in a bad way on a soccer pitch, and I think him and Westwood were sort of the dichotomy there.
Yeah.
I saw some turnovers. I felt like there's some chances he had.
Yeah.
But you know, it's like spring training. It's not a big deal.
What I love about Petkovic is his vision. I think he's the deep lying playmaker that we would really love to see. Some of the passes he made for Crown Legacy last year just really like blew me away, and I hope he can bring that to the MLS level.
Kyle, what is your experience covering this club and the intersection of Crown Legacy and Charlotte FC? I think it's fascinating because I went into last season and it was pretty clear to me that Crown Legacy was a priority. And did you feel that way?
I felt like in the building, yes. I felt like the coaching staff last year kind of know. I mean,
totally.
Whenever you'd ask Latanzio about it, he would maybe compliment the guy and then immediately follow it by saying it's a different level, which it is, and that's the truth. But you got the feeling that Adjumon was only going to play if someone else had something going on and wasn't playing well. So
if we were losing at home to Seattle, you know, desperately, or if we were down 3-0 at halftime in a playoff game, maybe.
Yeah. Yeah. So, but then I think, you know, Dean pointed out in his post game the other day that, you know, the speed of the game is different, and this is a learning curve for them, and that's just true. But I really do feel like he is a guy who's going to let young guys play.
Okay.
I mean,
I'm gonna give a take here. I've been holding this one in the holster. I went to the Columbus Crew 2 playoff match against Crown Legacy. Patrick Adjumon played 90 minutes. Brandon Cambridge played 90 minutes. Pekovic played 90 minutes. They couldn't score. What makes us think that those three can do it at the MLS level if they can't win a playoff game at home against Columbus Crew 2?
Soccer, soccer, dude, right? Sometimes you just don't score.
Of course you don't score. But my point is like, we're counting on young players, which I enjoy, right? Part of the reason why I love cup competitions,
right,
when I think about the Necaxa match, I'm like, that's one of my favorite parts of the season, right? Because I think the cup competitions give you the ability to see your entire roster, and I love playing young guys. But we've gone from our young players not being able to win a playoff game at home to being counted on to make the difference on our first team.
I don't think that's how it's going to go. Okay. I think there are two big giant holes on the roster, and they'll be filled. So, and these guys, if they play the cards right, they'll become complementary, and as time goes by, then become the studs.
Cool.
But I don't think Zoran and Joe are sitting back there saying, yay, we're good. Let's go. We got our coach. Let's roll
them out
there.
Well, I mean, Dino has said many times, if you're good enough, you're old enough. He mentioned even just the other day after Saturday's match, he said, players make their debut in Europe at 16, and, you know, like he harps on that a lot. At the same time, you know, I wouldn't take just the one for the specific result game that you're mentioning, Johnny. I mean, Columbus was just pure turtle mode. I mean, to say they parked the bus would be an understatement. Like, for that one specific match, I think they just got kind of bad luck. They had at least 10 chances and just couldn't score. So, I mean, it happens. It was a playoff game, and that is what you need to deliver. But, I mean, those guys, Tavares and Adjumon, were scoring goals all over Next Pro nonstop. And Pekovic was making sick passes from deep, for sure.
I brought it up for that perspective. I wanted to get y'all's perspective on it, because that was the only Crown Legacy match that I went to and saw in person.
Yeah,
right. So, from my point of view.
And Tavares didn't play great in that game. But
It was two. I went to Pups at the Pitch.
Yeah, you got it.
Pups at the Pitch.
But we were more, it was more about the Pups.
That it was all about the Pups.
Honestly, that was probably more about the Pups, for sure. But I think young players have their place on this team. I totally agree with you, Carol. I'm really fascinated by that second thing, and that's where we should probably go next, is you talk about more players coming in. I think Jabril Diani, who we just signed, is probably going to push Pekovic for that second sixth spot next to Westwood now.
That third.
With Bronico hurt. Bronico's in the mix, but he's currently hurt.
I thought Bronico could not get hurt.
I know. It's such a disappointment.
Did he mention, was it a thigh?
Yeah.
Did he say he was an injured thigh in the press conference for Bronico, so who knows how long that's going to be, but I think it's going to be Diani, Pekovic trying to fight for that spot next to Westwood with Bronico when he's healthy. But there has to be a DP coming, because that's something else Dean said. What did you get from Dean, the sort of the mystery soundbite where he said, certainly I would have had a player. Like, he mixed his tenses like four different ways, and I was like, did he say we are going to sign a player? Or are we not going to sign? Like, it was kind of a mix-up. I went with the optimistic reading and, like, enthusiastically hit the social media with, like, oh, my gosh, we're signing a DP. Some people told me to pull back on that, but, hey, I'm excited.
No, I think, and you know, we got to learn the lingo and the language, because he's coming from across the pond, and so the tense thing threw me a little bit too. Mm-hmm. But I think what I took from that is that we should see a big signing here in the next week or two.
Yeah, I agree. I tried to follow up, like, any. I don't know who you talked to at the club. I didn't talk to a ton of people, but the impression that I got without anything official is just that Dean expects a signing,
right,
and things can fall through. Deals can certainly fall apart. Deals might be on their way to being done that we don't know about, and Dean feels confident it could fall through, but we should expect it.
Right. Well, I mean, you go back to Grombach, right? Mm-hmm. And that was a giant thing that didn't work out. So how different would it have sounded, this conversation, if we had him, you know? Mm-hmm. So I think...
Totally. And it's not even about the player. It's about the money, right? Talking about $10 million to sign somebody. It shows it's a major statement of intent. Mm-hmm. You've said that before on the show. It's a showing of trying to be ambitious. And I think Zoran is out there. What's your take on Zoran Kanata? He's somebody that's still there. There's not a lot of people that are still there from the very beginning.
Yeah.
Right?
No. And I mean, I like Zoran. I think he's a you know, kind of a savvy guy, and I like communicating with him. I'm selfishly, I like people who answer my questions directly, and if anything, he might do stuff too directly sometimes, so I think that's why we don't see him all the time, but I enjoy it, and you know, through all the things the last couple years, I felt like he signed some guys who filled needs in a hurry. I mean, this winter was a little unusual for me in terms of what I would expect from Zoran. I would have thought, because I thought he pulled Karol Swiderski out of a hat. You know, like, yeah, let's do that again.
Yeah.
But I think what we saw is it's not as easy as he made it look.
Totally.
But I do, you know, and there's been some talk, and I think it's fair, you know, that we're kind of, Charlotte FC is sort of shifting more European. And what about the South American market? And, you know, I think you could raise that point. But I also can respect that you go where you're familiar. You go where you know the people. You know people Dean's familiar with. I'm kind of surprised we haven't seen more players that Dean had up his sleeve, guys he knew and trusted.
You're taking the words right out of Johnny Hayes' mouth.
Yeah. Yes. Yes. Well, the trialist.
Right.
Fosu?
Yeah, Fosu. Yeah. Tariq Fosu.
He kind of knew.
He knew
who he was.
I thought they had worked together in the past. They haven't. I think I misspoke that earlier.
Yeah.
But that's a phone call for him, right? That's a phone call to one person who says, legit, sign him. Yeah, so you have that trust. But more of that with a little bit more, you know, not just the English championship level, but, you know.
I thought maybe there'd be some players on Norwich City and Leicester City who weren't good enough for the Premier League, who were kind of hanging out in the championship, unsure if they were going to get promoted from those two clubs, but
maybe ready for an American adventure, you know?
Yeah.
If anything, this made me a little bit insecure. You know, I was kind of getting cocky about, hey, come to Charlotte, it's great. You know, you hear Ashley Westwood, and it just makes you like, oh, yeah.
Yeah.
But, you know, it can be a tough sell, I think.
It was for Karol Swiderski. As great as it is, like, he rejected it here. He wanted to go back to Poland and Italy, you know?
Yeah. So we've talked a lot about the club. One thing that I want to do is, you know, hear about your journey to this point covering the club. Right? I mean, you've had a career in journalism, and I'm interested in hearing perspective on, like, what have you covered in the past to learn your craft and bring it to the Charlotte FC audience today. So tell us about your career. Tell us where you started journalism and how you got to this point.
Well, I could do the long and the short version, guys.
It's a podcast, so you can do the long version.
In a nutshell, I grew up here in Charlotte. I grew up a fan of college basketball. I'm a Dukie, and NFL football. But I went to college and decided about halfway through I wanted to be a sports writer. I wanted to do something fun. I had been pre-med. I had a come-to-Jesus moment with that. No med school.
Who hasn't
for
been
me.
Pre-med?
You know? Ooh, yeah. But it was like, oh, yeah. It was wrong path. So ended up in Georgia. I started out in Macon, Georgia. When you land in Georgia in the 90s, you better get caught up on baseball. So that's what happened. I fell in love with baseball, covering the Macon Braves and the Atlanta Braves. And then
in the 90s, not a bad time to be doing that.
I mean, just literally, I remember, like, my first night at the Macon Telegraph as a 22-year-old sports writer, they sent me over with the guy who covered the minor league team. I did not know how to score a baseball game, right? This guy named Kamen Simpson, he covered some SEC stuff over the years, but he was a really good dude, and he did not judge me, didn't say a negative word, just sat down and taught me how to do it. And there was a guy in the press box that night, I won't name names. But
still around?
Still around.
Okay,
and,
I like this.
The next year, that was 92. Let's just say by 1995, I was covering the World Series with the Atlanta Braves against the Indians, and this guy went around apparently telling people, man, when she showed up here, she didn't know how to score a baseball game, and now she's covering the World Series. And I'm like, exactly. Yeah, you can learn how to do it. You know, it's and it's a beautiful thing.
It's not really
thing.
That hard to score a baseball.
I mean, I kind of want to, well, and to understand, I mean.
It's just got to be shown once and then you know how to do it, right?
But, yeah. Well, here's my thing. Like, and you know, maybe
This guy's acting like he's got the nuclear launch codes or, you know, the freaking Dead Sea Scroll translation.
I mean, I want to say it's not rocket science, but I don't want to offend anybody.
Yeah, I mean, you just got to pay attention.
Yeah.
Yeah, but I kind of feel like that's maybe been something that I've not purposely, but used to my advantage over the years, is I don't come into it like I know everything. And there's ways, you know, you can earn respect of people who do by asking them questions. It's not my job to tell them how they should be doing their job. It's my job to ask them how they did it, why they are doing it a certain way. So that was just sort of my thing. And I covered some of the greatest baseball players there are, and it kind of gives me chills, like Greg Maddux, Tom Glavine, John Smoltz, Bobby Cox. And so that's kind of, to speed up to Charlotte, I ended up moving back here where I grew up. I got married. I started having kids. I was not heavy into sports writing at the moment, but had an opportunity through a friend of mine, Edwin Peacock, who ran for mayor here 1 year, is a great friend of mine from high school. He knew a guy, Tony Macia, who had the Charlotte Ledger, and knew we were both Duke grads, and he knew that I had writing background, and Tony was always looking for writing, and literally just, we met for coffee like a month before the season started, and we just kind of cooked it up. Like, hey, you want to start writing about soccer? And I'm like, sure. I had played soccer growing up, and was kind of looking forward to a different challenge, you know? I mean, for me, it's kind of that fun thing of coming in, don't know everything, but I'm interested. And
similar with the baseball,
yeah.
Right? Yeah, I mean, a journalist's job, I think, is professional curiosity. So I think everything you're saying embodies that for sure.
I love to hear you say that you go into it as if you don't know everything, because you don't, right? I think sometimes the business can be an ego business, and you want to act like you know everything. You don't want to seem like you're not sure. And hearing you say that is like, I've heard you ask questions in the press conference, obviously writing some things that you have. And the way that you've covered the team, I would describe as like naturally inquisitive. And I think that really helps when you're covering a new club too, right? So the Braves, obviously not a new franchise in the 90s. This is a total new franchise. How's that kind of thrown a wrench into the way you cover a team?
Well, it's fun because I feel like, hey, maybe 10 years down the road, I'll be like, oh, yeah, I've seen every single game or whatever it is.
Oh,
you know,
that's so amazing to think
that's fun.
That
but, you know, it's nice to be around the enthusiasm and to see the start of things. I mean, even just getting to know some fans. You know, Heidi Underhill told me her story of why she got into soccer, the death of her partner. And unbelievable. And that was an immediate attraction to me, the relationship between fans and players in soccer. Doesn't happen in other sports, and that is something that used to be, if my editor would send me to write a fan story at a Braves game, he'd be like, oh, man. You know, it was just the same thing, you know, and you just didn't want to deal with it. But here, man, the fan stories are some of the best ones there are. So that's been cool. And I feel like that invisible barrier between fans and players is so much, it's less.
Yeah.
You know, it depends on the player, of course, but.
Soccer culture is the best.
Yeah.
And I think that you can underscore just one word that makes it different than everything else, and it's club. Right? You really do feel like you're part of a club. And the players and soccer players know that they have to make the fans feel like they're part of the club. Otherwise, things could get sour very quickly. Just, I think it's the nature of the game, right? Where in a soccer match in the 70th minute, the fans can really help you out. It's kind of like running a marathon, right? When you're running the marathon line, not that I have, but in talking to people that have, it's like the fact that there's people lining the streets and you got nothing left in the tank and they're cheering you on, they're really going to help you get to the finish line. In soccer, I think the fans actually have the ability to help a player in the 70th minute.
Yeah.
Go.
Yeah. Unless we care too much, like Latonzio was concerned.
Too much pressure on the boys.
Yeah,
too much pressure on the
boys. You make a good point. I have run 2 marathons.
Oh, you have? Oh, wow.
And
amazing.
It is like when you see, for me, the family member in the last 3 miles, first of all, you start to cry. Male or female, you do. And so if you can still breathe and get to the finish line. So, yeah, that's a great point. And I do think there were times last year, as great as the fans were, in those last 8 minutes, 10 minutes, I'm like, everybody's saying, oh, no. Here we go. And I'm like, stand up, yell. You know, was the Duke basketball in me, like, you know, on defense, you stand up and go nuts. You know, I still feel it. Not to be critical of the Charlotte fans, but there's a little bit of that Charlotte wine and cheese stuff that goes on late in a game. with the team down and a one-run lead, to protect. Stand up and scream.
Yeah. Help them get through the finish line. Yeah. Don't be nervous about the fact that you're going to give up a goal. But, I mean, PTSD is a real thing.
Yes. Yeah. No, I don't blame them. Yeah. I don't blame them. I mean, it was bad when a two-goal advantage was not enough.
What's it like, because you're not only a newspaper journalist by trade, you're an author. You wrote a book with Chipper Jones, co-wrote, I mean, we're talking about the all-time greats, Chipper Jones, greatest third baseman ever. Maybe. I don't know. Some would say. But
this guy named Mike Schmidt.
Brooks Robinson.
I know, I know you got some ties in that area as well. I know you like the
switch hitting third baseman.
I had to get the Phillies reference in there.
Of course,
From Philadelphia, talking about the 90s Braves, I'm just like.
Yeah. My point is, my question of all that is, because I was a Chipper Jones fan too. I love Chipper. What's the difference between covering a team on a day-to-day basis, a game-to-game basis, and then you do that a book project, a real in-depth getting to know an athlete's life, and how did your journalism change after doing that more in-depth? So, like, the in-depth, how did that influence your current day-to-day stuff?
What an awesome question, Danny. Thank you. You're, like, feeding right in my wheelhouse. No, I really feel like, you know, it's helped me a ton as a journalist to be a better listener. Because when you're in the day-to-day grind and you're used to being in a pack of 12 people around a locker and you've literally got like 3 minutes with a guy and you need him to answer your question, I would find I'd interrupt people. I mean, it was awful. You would literally, they'd be going off and you'd be like, no, and you'd bring it back. But what I learned in the time when I was working with Chipper, we would sometimes, I'd go to his house, I'd spend the whole day. I'd spend like 6-8 hours with him. We'd have, the morning we'd talk, we'd have lunch, then we'd come home. By about 3 o'clock, when we're both like melted into the couch and the tape recorder's going and we're just talking, that's when we got the absolute best stuff. So I can't, you know, and it just that mentality of remembering to shut up and listen. And it's not, I'm not saying I do it on the soccer beat all that often or very well, but, you know, in Zoom, it's tough. That's a tough environment. And I'm hoping, as with the club now in their facility, we're going to get more in-person interaction. But it is it's a good reminder, just in general, as a journalist, to just be quiet sometimes and ask short questions, open-ended questions, and sit back and see what you get.
I love that. That's a great answer. And it was a good question, Danny, because it's almost like you are able to see the human side of an athlete when you actually get to spend more than 3 minutes with them, right?
Yeah.
It's like in that work environment, everybody's kind of doing their thing, you get 5 minutes and you go home and you spend those days with them and you go, wait a minute, like there's so much more to this person than being the professional athlete that everybody sees.
Right.
I think that a lot of that is to me, as I move into my next part of my career covering sports, like I think respect is the ultimate tool, right? Like respecting that these players have a job to do and it's not who they are. But at the same time, there's performing for a lot of money for an audience. And I ran into that with Carol Swiderski and Camille Usiak, right? Where, you know, it's like, sure, you want a Camille out of the club, right? It just wasn't a good fit. But at the same time, like, well, this is a person.
Right.
Let's handle this situation delicately.
Right.
Right.
And maybe you don't need to come up with rude nicknames, Danny Brams, for Usiak, you know, like you did.
I sort of struggle. I struggle with Swiderski back and forth in my head because he's a great soccer player, you know, to me. Again, I'm on the Danny train on this one. But off the field, in a media setting, not the greatest. Wouldn't show up for post-game stuff, didn't want to deal with that. And then over time you figure out, you know, at first I thought it was language, and then I don't think it was. I think it was just where he was. And you know, some of that you got to respect the personality. Not everybody's going to want to hear themselves talk. You know, not everyone can be Ashley Westwood and be the gentleman who does everything, or Brent Bronico. Yeah. And I'm not asking for that. But, you know, if you could take the Ashley Westwood, Brent Bronico, and give him, you know, the skills of Carol Swiderski and put him in one, and not to diminish the skills. Sorry, Westy, if you hear this. Oh, Lord. Every once in a while, he'll put me in my place, which is funny. You know, yeah. I'm like, oh, is that the hardest ball you've ever hit? And he looks at me like, No, it really isn't.
He's going to start playing his highlight reel on that Chicago
That was the one. That was the one. But he did say later, in my defense, he said that was about as free as I've hit one or something like that.
Yeah. So what can we The rhythm of the season, right? We love to talk about the rhythm.
The campaign.
And the campaign is starting here. There's another preseason match this weekend on February 10th and then the 17th as well. So what is your rhythm to the season? What can fans expect from your coverage? Obviously, we have Football Friday.
Yeah.
So what can they expect from a Football Friday, and where can they find you during the week?
Yeah, thank you for asking. Yeah. You can go to thecharlotteledger.com and navigate your way. You sign up, you get an email in your inbox every Friday about 11:30. I come out. And my goal with it is, let's say you've had a busy week and you have not been on Twitter, you have not read all the latest, or even if you have, this is one place where you can find out what's going on with the team. Mm-hmm. You know, you can, I don't want to take anything away from podcasts either, but it's just a good landing spot to keep up and also maybe give you something you hadn't thought about or something you hadn't heard about, something you hadn't seen before. Whether it's fans, you know, my boss Tony, he's great. I'm not as funny as he is, and I'm a little bit too serious sometimes, but he likes me to be lighthearted and let's have some fun. I know they did a thing on, I was out one week and they did a whole thing with Sermenti. He loves the whole Sermenti vibe.
Who doesn't? Spreads joy wherever he goes.
And this year, not to give away any spoilers, but one of the things on the list of stories we want to do is, like, what's with the whole soccer sports bra thing? You know, we want to get into the science of the...
Oh, yeah, the trackers.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, there's C. It's a tracker. Mm-hmm. Okay, it looks like a sports bra.
Yeah, I think that a lot of those guys wear that because it holds the tracker that's like measuring their
yes, absolutely.
Their GPS or something. Yeah, right.
So yeah,
you're right.
But that's fascinating, right? The science of you can't hide anything. Right. You know, they know your heart rate, they know your work rate. I know when we toured the facility, you know, when they were showing us all that equipment, and even Westwood said, you know, we can't hide any hamstrings tightness or anything in those deals. So
my favorite stat.
You also can't stand around and like hope no one's looking because they're just going to go back and check the data later. You know?
Yeah.
Like,
Wes
is not running.
We don't get this, I don't think, running statistics. The running statistics are, you know, despite how you think the game went, you know, even if you lost 3-0, if you look at the running statistics and you're satisfied with them, at least you know everybody gave their effort. It's like when you lose a match like that and you look at the running statistics and it's like, well, nobody was really moving. It gives you a real window into actually what's happening on the pitch. So, and then I guess that's one other question. And I know we're coming towards the end of the episode. It's been awesome to have you on the show. And so I feel like Danny and I could do this for 2 hours with you. But I know that you're busy.
Give me another French. Give me another jug of French press. I'm good to go.
But, you know, covering a baseball game, it's pretty simple. You know, you're watching the pitcher, the ball's hit, and you're in the press box, you see the entire field. Covering soccer, it's just like, are you following the ball? Like, how do you, when you're watching the match, how do you consume a soccer match? Are you watching the ball? Are you watching positioning? Are you watching formations? And there's not a wrong answer here, right? Because I think that's the beauty of the sport.
Right.
Everybody watches it in a different way.
Yeah, I feel like it's changed over the last 2 years. I started off pretty laid back, and my sister has season tickets, so I don't have to write immediately after a game. So that's a nice benefit to this gig for me.
Gamer stories are just like not a thing anymore.
Yeah, you see the game, or you find out the score, listen to a podcast. You know, it started out, you know, just kind of enjoying it and watching the ball and whatever. Over time, I get a little bit more geeky, and I'm in the press box more, and I've got my little scorebook, and I have my own little way of what I keep up with, and hopefully get a little neater with it, because sometimes I go back and I'm like, what did I mean? But generally,
you can't even interpret your own shorthand. That's when you know you've fallen far too down the
ladder. There should be like a certain font that's called like journalist.
Yeah, right? Yeah. Don't try to read it. But you know, it was a reminder, and I also like I don't really want people to talk to me, you know, or ask me questions because I don't want them to take my attention away. Because I do feel like in soccer, you know, you turn away and you miss something.
Oh yeah.
You know, and you're not necessarily getting the replay that you want on the TV. They're not looking where you want to look.
100%.
But there's a good example that, you know, I you have to teach yourself and learn from yourself. Last year, third game of the year against Atlanta, Charlotte FC loses 3-0. I was in the stands with my sister and it was like a rare day game, so I had my kids with me, and my twins, they're 6, they have a little best friend who was at the game and had some Mac Daddy awesome seats. We went to see them at halftime, and the people around them saw our little kids playing and like, hey, why don't you sit here? I mean, they're losing 3-0, so a lot of people left, even in the prime spots. And so we spent the second half sitting at the 50 right behind Christian Latanzio, really. in front of me during the game.
I've snuck down to that section before. It's
pretty awesome. And I watched, that was the game, I don't know if y'all remember, Ashley Westwood got in a little bit of a tussle. I think he picked up a guy for the other team who was like, you know, I'm injured, and Ashley's like, get the heck up.
Yeah, yeah.
And to be that close to that moment and see the look on his face, and I ended up writing about it the next time because I'm like, Charlotte FC needs that. That, like, pissed off, nasty, get your butt up and keep playing, you know, is what this team needs. Because I felt like that game, they just got it handed to them the first three games. And I don't think I would have had that same feeling watching that play from the press box.
I love that. That's a fantastic way to think about it. Because there's, when you're, I love the tactical view, right? But I think the tactical view is great for a replay of the match, right? Not necessarily in the moment. Because, you know, even the manager has maybe like one of the worst views in the building. You know, they can see the emotion, but as far as tactics are concerned, it's a tough place to see on the sideline, the space on the pitch. And the other Westwood story that we love that checks out was the Necaxa game, which I'll mention again. Three nil at half, total opposite vibes. And as he's coming off at halftime, he is just berating the team. Like,
up 3-0, yeah.
We got another 45. Like, he was pissed. Oh, yeah. And I was just like, wow, okay. Like, this guy is a true leader.
Yeah.
So getting close like that allows you to kind of just kind of see who the leaders are on the pitch, right? Because in soccer, communication is so important.
Right.
You can't tell who's communicating up in the press box, but when you get to that field level, you know exactly who's barking.
Right. So, yeah, do it all, right? Don't get stuck in one spot and one vibe.
I love that answer.
And I think that was a limit of the ceiling of our team last year was communication, because by the end of the year, Westwood had kind of stopped doing that a little bit, to like the point where Capetti was whining, complaining late in the season at a home match, and Capetti's going over to like harass the VAR official on a VAR play that didn't even involve Capetti and stuff like that. And Westwood, you know, earlier in the season, I think he might have like been like, what the hell are you doing? Get over there. But he just kind of was resigned himself. He's like, all right, nothing's going to change because Latanzio sucks and I can't get anyone to do what I'm telling them to do despite my experience. So I almost felt like that kind of there was a degradation of the communication in our squad last year that hopefully has been restored under Dino.
Yeah, I don't think we can finish this podcast without talking about what we saw last night from the team with Scotty Arfield playing the guitar around the guys.
It's like you're reading my mind. I was just thinking about that.
Yeah.
I do, like, I mean, you know, it's
See,
all...
you can be a producer, too.
It's about exit. How do they pay? No, I'm kidding.
Well, I have one child for a reason. Let's just put it that way. One and only one.
But the X's and O's are important, but, you know, if you learn, you guys, from covering sports all these years, there's that X factor that's very important when you're talking about human beings, time together. To me, that's what showed up in the 10 minutes of the game last year. There was not that, you know, the fight for each other thing. And I got fooled last year. I'll totally admit, when I watched Anton Walks' service and I watched the guys walk off the field kind of arm in arm and I saw Swiderski kind of being a leader, I thought, man, maybe this is the team now, you know, maybe. But I was wrong. That wasn't what was happening. And God bless them. You can't sugarcoat a situation like that. And I do think it played on them all year, and it was a thing. But now watching that video of those guys sitting around, and Denny's got it pulled up, and they're like, it looks like a hotel team room, like a training meal maybe. I don't know if it's breakfast, lunch, or dinner, but they're hanging. Look at the body language. They're not in a hurry to go anywhere. They're enjoying each other's company. And I think, you know, maybe last year with Anton, everybody had their own way of dealing with it, and you understand that. But, hey, this thing we're seeing with Arfield and the guys enjoying it, maybe there's some – let's try it this year and see if I can get it right. There's more of a team connectivity that we can hope for here. And you know what else about this? We see Dean, right? Mm-hmm. He's in the back.
We've got some papers in front of him. Looking like he's trying to work.
He's got the readers down, so he's still coaching. He's still working, but he kind of smiles over at Arfield, you know?
Yeah.
Like, so he's not aloof. He's not in his ivory tower, but he's still being the coach. He's still in charge. Like, he could be like this, and everybody like, be quiet, go to the pitch, go get to work.
That's a great point. I don't know if CL would have been in this room last year on this video we're watching. I do think when you're in a big room of people and a guy busts out a guitar, it can go one of two ways. So I was glad to see this one go very well and be a great moment.
Well,
for the
I mean,
team.
Scotty is unbelievably talented. I listen to Something in the Orange by Zach Bryan all the time as a Scotty Arfield cover he did on his Instagram.
Mm-hmm.
And he nailed that. And that's one of the, that's a really tough song to cover.
Yeah.
And when Scotty nailed that, I was like, wow, this guy's actually pretty good
yeah.
at music. But talking about our field, I mean, it's a real thing. Because I've made the point on the last couple episodes that the vibes are good. And yeah. I say that tongue-in-cheek, like the vibe check.
Yeah.
But like in soccer, I feel like that's actually a real thing.
Yeah.
Right.
Vibes are bad. It's like,
And what were the two songs he chose to play that the club posted yeah. videos of? One,
Don't Worry, Be Happy,
obviously. I think there's a very much a, as much as we're on the outside kind of like, oh, we don't have signings, we're losing guys. I think internally it's much calmer. I think we're the under the water and the players themselves are the duck on the surface in that regard. But then the other song that he chose to play was Stand By Me. And there's already a movement now online to like we should have Stand By Me play at the end of games. I know that was a big issue last year. Like, they tried to sell us on Volare. That song wasn't really a good sing-along song for multiple reasons. They started playing Whitney Houston at the last couple of matches. They started playing I Want to Dance with Somebody at the end of matches, which I really liked because I think that's cool. Because I think just some supporters kind of pushed for that because they loved that song. But now everyone wants, you know, after this video came out, everyone wants, like, Stand By Me to be the post-match sing-along song, and I think that'd be kind of cool. Can we get Scotty on the field with the guitar playing it is the real question.
No, the real question is, Danny, can we get Scotty on the guitar playing at Hot Fly at the Brandt Bronico
yes.
party
yes.
this summertime? Yeah. Like, yeah. I think our field will be up for that. Yeah. I think he'll be up for that. I think he's somebody that can connect with a fan base in a way that a lot of young guys can't, right?
Yeah.
Hamidi Diop is a good example. Hamidi Diop did the press conference
yeah.
the other day. It was great to see him, but
yeah.
you could just tell he was raw.
Oh,
in
yeah.
the environment, wasn't
yeah.
it?
Yeah.
Every reporter on that Zoom tried to get him to MF the Latanzio, but he wouldn't take the bait. I was proud of the kid. He just kept saying, last year was different, this year's different. You know?
Yeah, that laid the gauntlet down for me. That's a little yeah. bit of a challenge there. There's more to come.
Last thing, Carol, where can people follow you on social?
I'm on, my maiden name is Rogers, so at Carol Rogers, C-A-R-R-O-L-L, Rogers, R-O-G-E-R-S, and then I can link you up with Football Friday, but I would love to have more readers and more feedback and continue this awesome conversation we have going between fans, players, team, you know, what we got going on in Charlotte. It's pretty awesome.
No, you're not kidding.
I'm a proud subscriber. I love the work and happy to support it. And I hope as many people out there that are looking for a way to enhance their Charlotte media diet, this is the good stuff. This is the steak that you're giving people.
Yeah. So appreciate it. Subscribe to Football Friday, of course. Continue subscribing to Charlotte Soccer Show. Appreciate everybody out there.
Appreciate that too.
Let us know what you think about this episode. Always appreciate that. And then, you know, one thing that's important to me is that, you know, this is not the only time that Carol's on the show this season, right? It's like Carol's right. coming back on this episode. We're planning on episodes every Sunday at Hop Fly throughout the season. So we'll make sure that you know when we're going to be recording. We'd love to have you stop by after a match.
You got childcare? You got somebody can watch my boys run around?
Yeah, we got some folks over at Hop Fly. They'll take care. Yeah, they can come on by.
Yeah, I think it's great, Carol. Thank you so much for coming on. I think that you bring a gravitas that, like, so much of us love to cover the club. And, you know, we call ourselves fanalists, and we have a great old time. But, like, you're the real deal, and we appreciate that. When it comes to, like things that we need to know, we have a lot of fun talking about the rumors and playing online and social and all that. But when it comes to, like, news about the club, whether it's, you know, harder things like criminal investigations that we've been involved with, player deaths and things like that, and you know, the interview you were doing with Anton's the mother of his daughter, like, that was amazing last year. And so, like, this is what you're getting from Carol Walton.
Okay,
she's giving you the real deal, so please subscribe to her.
I'm gonna whisper something in here.
Credibility.
Well, here's the thing, like, and I do, like, I'm gonna make my plug for journalism, which is, even in this day and age with Twitter and assumptions and opinions and all that, there are two sides to every story. And so a lot of the complaints, a lot of the questions, there's an answer to, and they can't always give it to you straight. They can't always tell you, Ashley Westwood has torn the crap out of his groin muscle, but they don't want to complain and whine about that. But there's usually reasons to things. Like Diagre last year, his wife, I think, must have had some struggles in her pregnancy at the end, and she's halfway across the world. And he had that awful play.
The other late PK, yeah.
Yeah, mm-hmm. And but there's a human side, and that's what I love about sports is trying to tap into that human side. That's the fun part.
It certainly is, and we'd love to do that here on the show. Hopefully we can do some more interviews as the season goes on. I think it's something that we'll plan to do, is just trying to bring these players to life, you know, in a way where they're not just out there on the pitch for 90 minutes, or I mean, Brand will go the 90 minutes. Yeah, he'll do the full 90.
He'll go another 30 for you.
Yeah, he's going the 120. If we're going extra time, he's not coming off the bench. So I'm John Hayes. He's Danny Rams, our special guest, Cal Walton, today on the Charlotte Soccer Show. Give us a follow. Give us a review. And as always,
for the crown, baby.